May I be permitted to tell you, dear lady, how extraordinarily delightful you look today?
Today's event is in your honour, Mr. Arabin, to mark the beginning of what I trust will be a long and happy tenure of St. Ewold's. So you have to enjoy the occasion heartily.
Thank you, Miss Thorne. I'll do my best.
I've arranged, by the way, for a tilting post to be set up in the park.
A tilting post?
Yes, Mr. Arabin. For one to ride one's horse at.
Oh.
With a target and a bag of flour on a swivel.
Ah, well, I shall not be enjoying things that heartily.
Mr. Arabin, you disappoint me.
Good morning.
Oh, now, who have we here?
The Grantleys, I believe.
Oh, yes, indeed. The Grantleys. Oh, and there's another carriage behind it. Excuse me, Mr. Arabin. I must greet my guests.
Miss Thorne.
And who has the second carriage brought? Miss Stanhope. Mrs. Bold. Such grace she has. And a third person, a fellow in clerical attire. Mr. Slope, no doubt. Well, you knew the worst already, Arabin. Eleanor Bold cares not a straw for you. Her heart is pledged. So you need not think about her any more. Indeed, you were an idiot to think about her in the first place. There she walks. Such grace.
Papa! Papa!
She's gone to greet her father. I love her. I do. Idiot that I am.
Was it a pleasant journey, my dear?
No, Papa, it was not.
Oh.
Mr. Slope was also in the carriage.
Mr. Slope?
Yes, and I very much wish that he had not been. I couldn't avoid having to travel with him, Papa.
I'm sure you couldn't. And I don't know why you should have wished to.
Yes, you do, Papa. You must do. You know what Dr. Grantley said about me and Mr. Slope, what Mr. Arabin said too. Oh, Papa. How hateful this all is. Why did they make up such horrid things? Why did they speak such falsehood?
Well, my dear, you call it falsehood.
Yes, Papa, of course I do. It was entirely without foundation.
Was it, my darling Nell? Was it really? Oh, that is good news.
Oh, Papa.
I can assure you, however, that whatever they said, they believed it to be true.
You knew it was all false, though, did you not, Papa?
My child, I didn't know what to think.
But that is dreadful. That's... So you suspected me, then?
Suspected? I'm not sure what you mean by the word. If you and Mr. Slope were to be married, there would be nothing wrong or disgraceful about it.
Oh, there would be, Papa. It would be utterly wrong. Utterly disgraceful.
Well... I wouldn't have opposed the marriage, but I confess I wouldn't have much welcomed it either. My sweetest Nell, you have taken such a weight off my mind.
Should you not be tilting or jousting, Mr. Arabin, or engaging in some other sport, such as talking with young ladies in shady bowers?
Perhaps, Signora Neroni. Perhaps... You must forgive me. I've discovered that I'm not quite in the garden party mood.
You are not. Shame on you. The festivities are expressly in your honour, and you are the one man who is expressly non-festive.
Yes, I would...
Mr. Slope, who was here but 5 minutes ago, was full of life and spirits. Why don't you rival him?
Mr. Slope. Yes, well, I couldn't rival Mr. Slope.
Perhaps not. The two of you are poles apart, at any rate. He is active, you are passive. He craves success and goes about achieving it. You look for success, too, of a different sort. And while you are looking for it, I suspect you will find yourself looking at Mr. Slope, too, and will see him win a wife and a bishopric.
Yes.
So, Mr. Arabin, will you let the slopes of this world outdistance you? Hmm? Will you continue to deny that pleasant things are worth the winning? Well, they are there to be had by someone. Why not by you? Is money so contemptible? Is worldly power so worthless? Is feminine beauty such an insignificant trifle?
Oh, do I believe that about feminine beauty?
Well, do you not? Tell me, Mr. Arabin, why were women made beautiful if men are not to look at them?
But men do look at them.
And when you look at women, do you not, as a rule, consider them to be of little worth, not fit to be your companions? Aha! The Widow Bold has come into the room.
Mrs. Bold.
She is with my brother, Bertie. Oh, and Mr. Slope is there, too.
Oh, yes, I see her now.
And she has already seen you. She was stretching her elegant neck to look at you, but you have disturbed her. Now, what would you say to Mrs. Bold as a companion? A companion, I mean, for life. Well, perhaps I was unfair on you just now. Your looks suggest as much, and by her looks, I should say that she is jealous of me. Why don't you confide in me, Mr. Arabin? If you think Mrs. Bold is a charming woman, if you would wish her to be your companion for life, tell me, and I'll do all in my power to make up the match.
All in your power would be nothing, for I believe that Mrs. Bold is already engaged to another.
I take it, then, that you do indeed find her charming. You would indeed think her a suitable companion for life.
You cross-question me unfairly, Signora.
She is, in your opinion, a woman who might grace the parsonage of St. Ewell's.
She would grace any man's house.
So, this is how you treat me. You know full well that I set up to be a beauty myself, and yet you have the effrontery to tell me that Mrs. Bold is the most beautiful woman you have ever seen.
I did not say that. You are more beautiful than she.
Ah, I thought a moment ago that the widow might be requiring a dose of strychnine from me, but I am satisfied. She is welcome to second place. And now, Mr. Arabin, I must remind you that beautiful and clever as I am, I cannot fetch my own food. Perhaps you might bring something, both for yourself and for me.
For you, certainly, but I'm not hungry.
Come, come, Mr. Arabin. Don't let love interfere with your appetite. It never does with mine.
I think we should both have a try at the tilting post, Mr. Slope, before the day is out, though not simultaneously, perhaps.
Oh, you must do without me, Mr. Stanhope. I'm afraid my chivalry will have to be seen elsewhere.
Oh. This way, Mr. Arabin. You must be introduced.
Thank you.
Mrs. Bold, of course, you know already.
Mrs. Bold.
Mr. Arabin.
And he knows me, too.
Mr. Stanhope. But this gentleman...
Sir...
I have not had the privilege to.
Well, then, Mr. Arabin, Mr. Slope.
Ah, we met, as it were, in the columns of the press, but never face to face.
Then I'm sure you'll have a great deal to say to each other. Now, will you all excuse me? I've just seen Mrs. Clamp Tantrum.
Did you address each other often, gentlemen, in the columns of the press?
Well, there was a quite extended exchange of views.
Yes, indeed, concerning the apostolic succession.
Now it seems there are no views left to exchange.
Oh, I don't think Mr. Arabin and I have yet resolved our differences. But on an occasion such as this, we wisely lay them aside.
Gentlemen, if you will excuse me...
Oh, Mrs. Bold, you're not leaving us.
I'm sorry, I wish to look for a friend of mine.
This is the time. This is the opportunity. And I am well prepared, well fortified. That which hath made them drunk hath made me bold. Dear lady, please, permit me...
Mr. Slope, pray don't let me take you from the house.
Oh, no, it's no trouble. She is, I think, angry with me.
Mr. Slope.
And I know why, of course. I have wronged her by being so slow to propose to her. I have tampered with her feelings. Shame on you, Obadiah.
I must beg of you, Mr. Slope, go back,
oh,
please.
No. You shall permit me to attend you. I wouldn't dream of allowing you to be here on your own.
But you must, for it is my special wish to be on my own.
No, dear lady, please, Do not ask me to leave you, not until I have spoken the words with which my heart is full and which I am come here to say to you.
I have no idea what you can have to say, Mr. Slope, that you couldn't have said just now in the house.
There are some things, believe me, that a man cannot well say before a crowd, that perhaps he cannot well say at any time, though he fervently desires to give them utterance.
Mr. Slope...
You see, for some great while now, dear lady, I have nurtured the hope that you and
no, I... No, no! Whatever it might be that you hope for nothing, please, as far as I am concerned.
Oh, but I...
Our acquaintance is very slight and will remain so.
But...
Pray, let that be enough.
Dear lady...
Let it be enough.
Forgive me, but it cannot be enough, since you have rejected my offer before allowing me to make it.
Please, Mr. Slope, there is no need for us to quarrel.
But this is cruel of you. And unchristian, too. Even the very worst of God's creatures must be permitted to hope. What have I done that you should pass on me so severe a sentence?
Mr. Slope, I would ask you to leave me.
Leave you? No.
Then I must leave you.
No, no. Dearest lady, no. No, beautiful woman. Oh, beautiful woman.
Leave me, Mr. Slope.
You cannot pretend to be ignorant of my love for you. Yes, Eleanor, I love you. I adore you. I want you more than anything else, excepting heaven, of course. Eleanor, how
please,
sweet
Mr. Slope.
To take the path to heaven with you by my side, each of us guiding the other, to travel through this mortal valley hand in hand and thereafter dwell together at the foot of the Almighty's throne. Eleanor...
My name, sir, is Mrs. Bowles.
Oh, beloved angel, be not so cold towards me. See, where our brisk walk has taken us. Here, Eleanor, here in this pleasant shrubbery, I will hold you close to me.
No, and sir, you will not.
You want no. My heart.
You will tell me nothing, Mr. Slope.
Oh.
And in return, I will never, never speak another word to you again.
She is a woman of cruelty, of wantonness, wickedness. And this, for certain, is a place of wickedness. I should never have come here. By attending this indecent, salacious event, I have sanctioned it, lent it my tacit approval, and in turn I have been debased by it. Debased and punished. My cheek is very sore. Oh, there's the bishop. I'll not converse with him. I'll go straight to the house and... But who is that with him? Dr. Gwynne, surely. The master of Lazarus College and a man of some influence in the matter of ecclesiastical appointments.
And what about the hebdomadal board, Dr. Proudie?
Yes.
Good afternoon, my lord.
Oh, Slope.
This is all very pleasant, is it not?
Yes, it is. Very. The hebdomadal board, Dr.
Delightful Gwynne, to see so many persons enjoying themselves so thoroughly.
Yes. Yes, indeed. The board, I think...
Dr. Gwynne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My lord, I would be most obliged if you would introduce me to Dr. Gwynne. The opportunity is too much in my favour to be lost.
Oh, very well. Dr. Gwynne, this is my present chaplain, Mr. Slope.
Pleased to meet you, Mr. Slope.
And I, Dr. Gwynne, am most honoured to meet you.
Please excuse me, my lord.
I have, of course, read very many of your exegetical essays, Dr. Gwynne.
My lord, a messenger came with a note from Barchester.
From Barchester?
From the deanery.
Oh, indeed. Well, my lord?
The dean is dead.
You slapped his face. How wonderful.
No, it was not wonderful, Charlotte.
Well, of course, I'm very sorry that he upset you. But I'm so glad that you gave him a clout. And Bertie will be thrilled. He was on the point of hanging himself, you know, when he saw you and Mr. Slope going off together.
Charlotte, we did not go off together. He pursued me.
Poor dearest Eleanor. Now listen, it's quite clear that you and Mr. Slope cannot return to Barchester in the same carriage.
You're right. I don't think I could endure that.
Nor, until you do return, can we risk any further aggression from Mr. Slope. So let us put you under the special care of my brother. Oh, well, we shall have to find him first, of course. But once we do, he shall be your guardian, and he shall journey back with you to Barchester.
But what about Madeline? Bertie, Mr. Stanhope, always has to travel with her.
Well, even Madeline, in an emergency, can be accommodating. Come, we'll search for Bertie.
Sorry news.
About the Dean? My father, you know, had far greater staying power.
Did you talk very much with the bishop, Dr. Gwynne?
As much as I could bear.
I don't suppose he said anything of any interest.
He didn't, to be frank.
Did he mention the hospital?
No.
The whole affair of the wardenship has been an absolute outrage, as I'm sure you're aware.
Dr. Grantly.
My father-in-law, Mr. Harding, is being denied a position which is his by rights.
Well, perhaps.
I tell you, Dr. Gwynne, I will be forced to wage war.
No, Archdeacon, no. There is no army to fight on your side. Neither you nor I have any power in this matter, and I do believe that it would be bad policy to act as if we had. If the bishop has made up his mind about the wardenship...
You mean, rather, if the bishop's wife has made up her?
Then there is, I fear, little that can be done.
Little?
Nothing.
Good heavens!
I never fear, Archdeacon. Though there won't, I hope, be a war in Barchester, life won't be without excitement. Well, not for a little while. The post of warden is as good as taken. But there is a new dean to be found.
I'm a little perplexed, Mr. Stanhope. You say Mr. Slope has already made his departure.
Oh, yes. An hour since.
So there is no reason why you cannot travel back with Madeline?
Not really, no. Still, let Charlotte have her own way, as ever.
But what about Madeline?
Oh, I'm sure she can do very well without me. She's going to have to, sooner or later.
Why? What have you got planned? You're not intending to leave Barchester, are you?
I rather think I must.
To pursue your profession, you mean?
Well, yes, if you can call it that.
Oh, I think sculpture is a very fine profession. The finest, apart from painting. And you are, I believe, of equal proficiency in each.
Oh, yes, pretty much so.
Though neither, perhaps, do you overexert yourself.
Well, that's true enough.
Are you determined to leave Barchester?
Well, to tell the truth, Mrs. Bold, I am determined to be guided in this matter by you.
By me?
Yes, Mrs. Bold, wholly by you. You must lead me and set me right, and only you can, and only you should, because the last thing I would wish is that I cause you offence or distress.
I don't understand.
Mrs. Bold, you are aware, I'm certain, how attached to you my sister Charlotte is?
Yes. Yes, indeed.
To tell you the truth, I've never known her to love anyone so warmly on such a short acquaintance. You're aware, too, of course, how well she loves me. It is on account of that love, Mrs. Bold, that Charlotte has suggested a plan. A scheme, which would help me to be settled in the world should I not be too successful in my profession.
What kind of scheme?
She wants me to marry you.
Well, it seems that Miss Stanhope has been contriving for me a great privilege. But she might have saved herself the trouble. I fear I lack the ambition to take part in her plan.
Pray don't be angry, Mrs. Bold.
I am not angry. Not with you, at any rate.
But pray don't be angry with Charlotte either.
She was so kind to me from the start. I enjoyed her cordiality and her warmth, and now I see the cause of all this kindness.
I'm sure she meant well.
Oh, I'm sure she did. For your family, though, not for me.
She's had a hard game to play. The rest of us depend on her so greatly.
Oh, Mr. Stanhope.
I'm sorry. I truly am. I didn't try to deceive you, at any rate.
But why did you agree to the scheme?
Well...
What have you gained by telling me about it? It's quite clear that you and Charlotte are not of one mind on the matter.
No, that's true, we're not. I acknowledge, of course, that I'm in need of paying off my debts and so on. Oh. But I would only have been enthused by the notion of marriage if, by some chance, you regarded me as more than a friend.
I never have, though. Never.
No, indeed. Never.
So why have you told me all these things?
Because I don't wish to anger Charlotte. Anger her, I mean, as well as disappoint her.
I see. Your sister wanted me to be her dupe, and now you want me to be your accomplice.
Ah, Mrs. Lawler.
In order to shield you from your sister's wrath, I am to pretend that you have been obedient to her and tried your very best to sacrifice yourself. I was not angry with you, Mr. Stanhope, but I am now, and with more cause, I think, than your sister will ever have.
You are a reprobate, sir. That's what you are.
I suppose I am, really.
Bertie, please.
You are a heartless, thankless, good-for-nothing reprobate.
Yes, indeed. There's no denying it.
I can tolerate no more. I've done with you.
Oh, Papa, you shall not say so.
I shall say so. I do say so.
Papa, please. Bertie is not the only one to blame.
That's true enough. Madeline is not far behind him in degeneracy.
We have made our beds, Papa, and we must lie on them.
Perhaps. But his bed, if he can afford one, shall be elsewhere.
Oh, Papa.
Well then, when should I leave? Tonight?
Oh, no, not tonight.
Tomorrow, perhaps?
Yes, tomorrow.
Will the 4:30 train be soon enough?
You never proposed to Eleanor at all, did you?
Oh, she understood that she might have me if she wished. But she didn't wish.
And then, I suppose, you betrayed me. You told her that it was all my doing.
Well, yes, sister. It came out somehow.
Oh, Bertie. So that's the end of that alliance?
Yes. And the end, too, of my sojourn in Barchester.
How much is Papa giving you?
£5 a week, which is just enough to starve me.
Will you try to be a sculptor?
Certainly, dear Charlotte. I shall make my own tombstone.
Letitia.
Who was it, my dear?
A man from the bishop's palace.
The palace?
He brought two letters. One is addressed to you, Letitia, and the other to me.
Well, let me have yours, Q, and you shall have mine. Thank you. And we shall see.
Yes, we shall see.
Oh. Quiverful?
Yes, my dear.
You are to be at the palace at 11 tomorrow morning to see Dr. Proudie.
Yes, and you are to be there at the same time, my dear, to see Mrs. Proudie.
Oh! She'd never have sent for me again, Quiverful, if it wasn't all right. If you weren't in very truth to have the wardenship.
My dear Letitia, don't be too certain.
But I am certain. Mrs. Proudie is stiff and stern and as proud as pie crust. But at bottom, she's a decent woman.
Oh, Letty.
Oh, Q. Oh, and for heaven's sake, Q, don't let anyone talk you out of it again.
I have paid a few visits of late to the Signora Neroni, spoken at some length with her on each occasion, whereas the last time I saw Mrs. Bold was at Miss Thorne's party. A mere 10 minutes I was with her then, and uncomfortable minutes they were, too. It is very strange, is it not, that I should be dangling around the Signora so much when I am so much in love with Mrs. Bold? Well, the Signora possesses kindness, I think, as well as beauty. And though she likes to tease me by talking of Mr. Slope, more often she delights me by talking of Mrs. Bold. I am very much taken with Signora Neroni, but it is Mrs. Bold. Mrs. Bold I love. Oh, if only I could tell her so.
Well, Archdeacon, your college friend, your paragon of whom you had such hopes, your ecclesiastical knight before whose trusty lance Mr. Slope was to bite to the dust, your Mr. Arabin now finds himself caught up in scandal.
Yes, Susan, so I understand.
All of Barchester is talking of Mr. Arabin and the Italian woman. He hardly spent a moment away from her at Miss Thorne's party, and it's said he's visited the Stanhope House any number of times since. He's utterly infatuated with her, it seems. A shameful business, Archdeacon. Mm. and one which won't do you much credit, I fear.
No, Susan, I fear it won't.
Of course, if you had been led by me, you would never have put a bachelor into St. Ewell's in the first place. You will have to speak to him. You will have to tell him to desist from doting upon married women and to find himself a wife. A pity he didn't think to find one sooner, before my sister became so well acquainted with Mr. Slope.
Oh, Slope. Slope. Slope, no doubt, is going to marry Eleanor. Slope, no doubt, is going to be appointed Dean of Barchester. Slope is going to become powerful and rich and respectable. And all the while, Mr. Arabin will remain Vicar of St. Ewell's, a man of poor means and extremely dubious reputation.
Excuse me, Your Reverence, ma'am. Mr. Harding has arrived.
Mr. Harding, at this hour?
Yes, Your Reverence.
Thank you. Good evening to you both. You must forgive me.
Papa?
There's nothing the matter, is there, Warden?
I'm not Warden.
I know.
Mr. Quiverful is the Warden.
Yes, Harding.
And it is, I think, a very sensible appointment.
Yes. What has happened, Harding? What is the matter? Has Eleanor gone off with Mr. Slope?
Archdeacon!
No, Archdeacon, she has not.
Has Slope been made Dean?
No, Archdeacon, he has not. But...
What, Harding?
They have offered the position to me.
To you? Good heavens!
Oh, my dear father!
So I thought I had better come round straight away and consult with you.
Consult? What is there to consult about? Oh, my dear Warden. That is, my dear Mr. Dean. I congratulate you. I've never been so happy in my life.
Well, thank you, but you see...
Papa! Papa! This is Dr. Gwynne's doing, Archdeacon, you may be sure.
Yes, I suppose it must be. Good old Gwynne.
But my reason for coming to see
I'd
you...
Oh, I'd give £20 to see Slope's face when he hears the news.
Well, Mr. Slope may indeed hear that I have been offered the deanship, and I hope that it becomes generally known that I am greatly gratified.
I should think you are.
And much indebted, of course, to Dr. Gwynne. But all the same, I'm afraid I can't accept the offer.
What?
Papa?
What?
I can't accept it.
Good heavens, why not?
I'm not fit for new duties.
Duties? What duties?
Did you see what the Jupiter said the other day?
The Jupiter.
How a young man was needed in the job?
Yes, and the young man in question was, of course, Mr. Slope. Is that what you want, Harding? For Slope to become Dean? Oh, Harding. All the trouble you gave us over the wardenship, and now this. I do wonder, you know, about your sanity. Harding, you will accept the offer that has been made to you.
No, Archdeacon. No, I will not.
It is very kind of you to come here, Mrs. Bold, particularly after all that has happened.
You wrote in such a strain, Signora, that I couldn't refuse.
Well, I wish to tell you something very important. You may think it indelicate, too, but I am sure that I am right in saying it. You know Mr. Arabin, I believe?
Yes, I am acquainted with him. Slightly, that is.
If you know him at all, then I believe you must like him. Do you like him, Mrs. Bold?
Why is it you ask?
You are cold towards me, Mrs. Bold, and yet I am trying to help you.
Forgive me, I don't wish to be uncivil, but I find your questioning very singular.
Ah, well, I intend to make it more singular still. Answer me this. Do you love Mr. Arabin? Do you love him with all your heart and soul?
Signora,
he loves you, Mrs. Bold. He has not told me as much, but I know he does. He adores you. He thinks of you and nothing else. He is thinking of you even now as he tries to write next Sunday's sermon. Oh, what would I not give to be loved in such a way, if, that is, I were fit to be loved.
Signora.
He is not like other men, Mrs. Bold. You must not expect him to come to you with vows and pretty presents. With him, yea will stand for yea, and nay for nay. What I tell you is for you to use or not to use as you think fit. But if you use it, and I hope you will, I shall, in return, expect you to write to me and to inform me that the sins of the Stanhope family are forgiven.
Oh, there, there, little man. There, there. This young fellow must be growing a tooth.
Yes, Miss Thorne, I think he is. Clever boy, aren't you, John?
You're giving him Daffy's elixir, I suppose.
Daffy's elixir?
You're not? Oh, but he must have Daffy's elixir. He must.
Well, Dr. Rearchild
said... Oh, no. Don't listen to him, my dear. Doctors aren't doctors these days. They're jumped-up apothecaries. Daffy's elixir. That's what Johnny wants. I'll get him a bottle tomorrow.
You are very kind, Miss Thorne, very kind. And so very generous in your hospitality, too.
Generous, my dear? I think not. It's all selfishness. I love Ullathorne, but I must have pleasant and entertaining company here. Oh, and by the by, I have invited Mr. Arabin to visit tomorrow.
Mr. Arabin?
Yes. I know that some silly gossip about him has been put abroad, but I like the man. Do you like him at all, my dear?
My lord.
Ah, Slope.
You asked me to see you.
Come in, Mr. Slope.
My lord, if the reason you have called me is at all connected with myself...
Well...
Yes, Mr. Slope, it is very closely connected with yourself.
Then, my lord, I would prefer that no discussion between us should take place in the presence of a third person.
Oh, don't alarm yourself, Mr. Slope. No discussion is necessary. The bishop merely intends to express his own wishes.
That is right, yes. Slope, it grieves me greatly to find fault with a clergyman, particularly a clergyman in your position, but I must tell you, Mr. Slope, that your conduct has fallen very short of what... might have been expected of you.
Why, what have I done amiss, my lord?
What have you done amiss?
My lord...
You dare to ask the bishop what you have done amiss? Does not your conscience tell you that you have disgraced yourself by consorting with a married woman who bears the absurd name of Signora Neroni, and who is altogether unfit for an evangelical clergyman's society?
Unfit, madam? But I first became acquainted with her in your own drawing room.
Yes. And most shamefully you behaved there, fawning on her, kneeling at her feet. That is, if she has any feet. Slobbering over her. A disgrace! I should have insisted on your instant dismissal.
Oh, I have yet to learn, Mrs. Proudie, that you have the power to insist either on my going or my staying.
What? I am not to say who is to frequent my own drawing room. I am not to save my servants and acquaintances from being corrupted by your depravity. Believe me, sir, I do have the power to insist upon your going, and I have no choice but to use it. Have the goodness to understand, sir, that you are no longer the bishop's chaplain. Have the goodness to seek another preferment and other accommodation forthwith.
My lord, may I have from your own lips any decision that you may have come to on this matter?
Certainly, that's a very reasonable request. You will have to leave, Mr. Slope. Forthwith.
Mrs. Bold.
Mr. Arabin.
Forgive me, I have disturbed your reading.
In truth, you haven't. It is not a very good novel, this. The sunset has been far more appealing. Very lovely, is it not?
Yes. It's very lovely. Do you like this place?
I do. Very much.
Yes. There is something about old-fashioned mansions that I find especially delightful.
Oh, I like everything old-fashioned, Mr. Arabin. Old-fashioned things are the most honest, I think.
Well, I don't know about that.
Do you not?
Indeed, I don't. But then I fear that I have no firm opinion on nearly all important subjects. It is the bane of my life. Mrs. Bold.
Yes, Mr. Arabin.
I am guilty of a very great offence towards you.
Mr. Arabin.
What I said to you when we were at Plumstead, the question, I mean, that I asked of you about you and it was indelicate on my part. It was unwarranted, improper, and unmanly. And so I must request your pardon.
I took no offence.
Oh, but you did, Mrs. Bold. And you were right to do so. But I hoped that I might be forgiven, and that is the reason why I came in here.
Mr. Arabin. Mr. Arabin.
Well, I will see you at dinner, Mrs. Bold.
No, 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 don't go yet. Not until I have spoken to you. I do forgive you, Mr. Arabin. You know that I forgive you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mrs. Bold. Give me your hand. Ah, yes. Yes, I know that you have forgiven me. That much I do know. But there is perhaps... there is yet more to be known. By me, by you...
Mr. Arabin.
If only I could trust myself to say the words, so that I would make you know, so that you would believe me. Oh, Eleanor.
Say no more, Mr. Arabin. There is no need.
Eleanor. Oh, Eleanor. My own.
Is that the lot, sir?
Yes, thank you. Well, then.
Come on!
I am upon the world once more. I am not, it seems, to be the Dean of Barchester. I am not even to be the Bishop's chaplain. Mrs. Proudie has won her fight, her little skirmish. But it was it not, a very small affair? And I'm not wounded. Not scratched. My spirit is unbowed, and I look to the future. There is a woman I know in London, the wife of a sugar refiner. Her home is in Baker Street, and she is much given to the encouragement and entertainment, too, indeed, of young evangelical clergymen. To her I will repair. I'll be glad to be away from Barchester. I find the air here uncongenial.
So, Eleanor, you give me your news, and then I will give you mine.
Well, Papa. Oh, Papa, I hope you will rejoice at it, for if you don't, it will break my heart.
You are going to be married.
Yes, Papa. Yes, I am. Oh, promise me you will love him, Papa, for my sake.
Dearest Nell, I must love anyone that you love. Come, tell me who it is.
Well, then, it is Mr. Arabin.
Mr. Arabin? Impossible.
Don't say anything against him, Papa.
Against him, my dear child?
It's done now and mustn't be undone. Please, Papa, is he not good and noble and high-minded?
He is, he is. He is everything a good man possibly can be, sweetest Nell, and I shall cherish him and... Now that is an interesting thought.
What is, Papa? And what is your news that you wanted to tell me?
Oh, my news, Eleanor, concerns the deanship, as indeed does my interesting thought. The position of Dean of Barchester has been offered to me.
Papa!
And I have refused it.
Papa, but why?
Because another man will suit the office better.
Mr. Harding.
Oh, and Dr. Grantly, too.
Arabin, my dear Arabin.
I gather Eleanor has told you.
She has, she has.
It's just as I would have it, Arabin. She is an excellent woman, as is her sister. And, of course, she'll not come to you empty-handed.
No.
You've not been waiting for us long, I trust.
Not at all.
Harding and I took something of a risk inviting you to come to the deanery at this hour, for if our train had been delayed, you might have been sorely inconvenienced.
Oh, you have been away?
We have.
On business, Arabin.
Successful business.
Ah, indeed.
Mr. Arabin, I am so very glad that you are to marry my daughter.
Thank you, Mr. Harding. I am extremely fortunate, far more so than I deserve. You, though, sir, have won your deserts with regard to the deanship, I mean. My heartiest congratulations.
Ah, well...
It was a happy choice.
It was. It was. But I fear, Arabin, that neither of us is destined to be son-in-law to a dean, for Mr. Harding will not agree to the appointment.
He will not? Why?
He pleads old age, the foolish fellow, and won't be persuaded.
Indeed, Arabin, I have been to Oxford with the Archdeacon to tell Dr. Gwynne of my decision. And then we all three of us travelled to London, and some very satisfactory work was done there.
I see. I think I see. So may I ask who is to be Dean?
Ah, yes. That's the question. Harding, you have a letter, I believe?
I do. From the Minister of State.
It is a letter which invites its recipient to become the Dean of Barchester.
It is a letter, Arabin, which is addressed to you.
To me? To me?
Yes, Arabin, to you! You won't refuse the offer, I trust?
I have come back to Hiram's hospital today to introduce Mr. Quiverful to those old men of the hospital who know me. I shook hands with Bunce, dear old Bunce, urged him and the others to be as kind and obedient to their new warden as they ever were to me. Urged Mr. Quiverful, in turn, to have no qualms of conscience about taking on his new position. He has not supplanted me. He has succeeded me, and I wish him well. And his wife, and his 14 children. May he be as happy here as I was. And I pray that Eleanor and Arabin may be happy too. And Susan, of course, and Dr. Grantly. His prospects of happiness are greatly increased, I feel, by Mr. Slope's departure. As for myself, I am, I know, thrice blessed. My lines have fallen in very pleasant places, and for that I give my sincere and humble thanks to God.
Barchester Towers by Anthony Trollope was dramatized for radio by Martin Wade. Septimus Harding was played by Alec McCowan, Eleanor by Juliet Aubrey, Slope by Simon Russell Beale, Mrs. Proudie by Rosemary Leach, Dr. Grantly by Stephen Moore, Dr. Proudie by David Horovitch, Madeline by Belinda Lang, and Arabin by Clive Francis. Bertie was played by Michael Cochrane, Charlotte by Patience Tomlinson, Miss Thorne by Margaret Courtney, the Bishop of Barchester by Peter Howell, Dr. Stanhope and Sir Lambda Mew-Mew by Stephen Critchlow, Mr. Quiverful and Sir Omicron Pie by Jonathan Keeble, Mrs. Grantly by Jimmy Bond, Dr. Gwyn by Geoffrey Whitehead, Mrs. Quiverful by Zalema Dean, and The Servant and Cab Driver by Roger May. Barchester Towers was directed by Cherry Cookson.
Good day to you, good day, good day, good wishes.
Good day to you, Squire Gresham.
Thank you, thank you, so lovely to see you.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. Good day, dear friend.
Likewise, Squire, your health.
Oh, and health to young Mr. Frank, too, of course.
Ah, yes.
May he live 1,000 years and then never die.
Thank you. Thank you, Farmer Oakle. That's very kind, you're very kind.
Oh, how lovely to see you.
Today, Frank Gresham of Greshamsbury is 21 years old. And because he is Frank Gresham, son of Squire Gresham, and because in due course he will inherit the Greshamsbury estate, his coming of age must be celebrated in fit fashion. Gala, doings, and so on. In the park there are tables placed under the oak trees, and Squire Gresham's tenants are sat there to eat and drink. Later, for guests of the gentler sort, there'll be a dinner and speeches. But those who do honour to Frank Gresham and who drink his health are not as joyous as perhaps they should be, for they know that things were very much better at Greshamsbury in former times. Frank Gresham comes of age today, but all that he'll be heir to, I fear, is financial ruin.
Dr. Thorne by Anthony Trollope. Dramatized by Martin Wade.
Oh, I've no objection to talking, Mr. Gresham, only I'd have thought you'd prefer to stay among your guests.
Well, Doctor, if there's any merriment to be found, they'll find it as easily without me. I've lost much mirth over the years, as well as much else. You were not at Greshamsbury when I came of age.
No.
Oh, I tell you, today's festivities are a very tame affair by comparison. Anyway, to business.
Yes.
I need £10,000, Thorne, at the least. 12, preferably.
That's a very large sum of money.
10,000, then.
10,000's a very large sum.
Now, do you think Scatcherd will let me have it?
Oh, yes, Scatcherd will probably oblige. But I rather fear, indeed I know, that he'll expect to have the title deeds of Greshamsbury in return.
What, for £10,000?
When the last loan was made, he warned that it would indeed be the last unless he had ample security to cover what he'd already advanced. Oh, Mr. Gresham, I wish to goodness you had no more need to borrow.
Well, Doctor, so do I. Look, if I don't get the money from Scatcherd, I'll get it elsewhere.
Yes, and what will you be required to pay for it?
I'd sooner pay double, thank you, than listen to you moralizing. Oh, forgive me, Thorne. There are some things which are very hard to bear, I find. Though God knows I should be growing more used to them by now.
Well, indeed he should, for it is many years now since the Greshamsbury estate was prosperous. Squire Gresham spent much money on standing at parliamentary elections, also on keeping the East Barsetshire hounds, though he has given up both those expensive habits now. But he has not given up the Lady Arabella, his wife. And Lady Arabella is a de Courcy by birth. And by birth, therefore, accustomed to a certain mode of living which he is determined to maintain, even when it cannot properly be afforded. By the way, Lady Rosina de Courcy is here at Greshamsbury for Frank's coming of age. She is Lady Arabella's sister-in-law, you know. I think it must be very pleasant for the one lady to have the other staying with her. For Lady Rosina is able, as very few of us are, to give Lady Arabella the sympathy and understanding she so much requires.
A mere 10 weeks we were in town, that's all.
Barely time, I would have thought, for the girls to get their teeth looked at properly.
I told Mr. Gresham as much, but of course he'd rather we weren't in town at all.
That's absurd. You have a house there.
At present, Rosina, yes.
He wants to sell it? Sell the house in Portman Square?
Yes. and shut us away in the country for all time.
But Arabella, Arabella, surely your husband isn't... He surely isn't in such straits as he claims to be.
I think he is, Rosina.
How come? My dear, he doesn't gamble, does he?
Gamble? No, I don't think so.
Well, the money must be going somewhere. What does he tell you, Arabella, when you request from him the common necessaries of life? What excuse does your husband give for being so hard pushed?
He gives no excuse. He makes protests instead. You should have heard how he groaned the other day when I asked for a few £100s. Well, I must have a few £100s to spend now that Augusta is to be married.
Of course you must.
Oh, Rosina, I have all the sufferings and privations of a poor man's wife, but none of the consolations. He tells me nothing, except there's no money to be had.
Shameful, not to be endured.
If he talks to anyone, it's that horrid doctor.
What? Dr. Thorne? Oh, heavens! How a country gentleman, for that's what your husband is, with all his faults, how he can discuss his affairs with a low apothecary, I can't imagine.
Oh, he's knowledgeable about everything, is the doctor. Advises on everything, too, it seems. I think Dr. Thorne is the cause of many of my husband's difficulties. I really do.
Arabella, I think you may be right.
It's Frank that I'm sorry for. I could be easy about everything if he weren't to suffer.
Mr. Gresham, your son will do very well yet. One doesn't need 14,000 a year to be happy.
My father gave me the property entire.
Yes.
And now, some of the money, you see, I need for Augusta.
Oh, yes. When's she getting married?
September. I've agreed to give her fellow 6,000. He wants it in cash.
Does he?
Hmm. Yes. Do you know Moffat at all?
I know of him, of course. Barchester MP and so forth. Never met him, though.
Nor have the people of Barchester, I gather. I have to say I'm not much in love with Mr. Moffat. But if my daughter is, that's everything, I suppose. So, you'll see scattered, will you? About the loan.
If that's what you want.
10,000 will do, I think. And now, Thorne, I must dress for dinner.
It is our turn now, Aunt De Courcy. Will you take my arm?
Thank you.
This way, Frank, this way. Head of the table.
Father.
No, no, this is your rightful place today.
As you wish, Father.
Oh, brother.
Congratulations, Frank.
Thank you, Mother. Well, with you on one side and Aunt on the other, I shall be kept in perfect order.
We expect a great deal of you now, dear boy.
Do you, Aunt De Courcy?
It will now depend altogether upon yourself, you know, whether you maintain that position which the Greshams have held for so long in Barsetshire, or whether you will fail.
Oh, I mean to go along all square and no mistake. When I get back to Cambridge, I shall read like bilio.
You're going back to Cambridge? Why?
Well, I've only had a year there, Aunt. I intend to work hard and take my degree.
Arabella, is Frank to go back to Cambridge?
So his father seems to say.
But is it not a thorough waste of time?
In my opinion, Rosina, it is. But I never interfere.
I have been sat next to Miss Beatrice Gresham at dinner. Beatrice is one of Frank's sisters. The other sister, Augusta, is the one who is shortly to be married. There's a great deal of her mother in Augusta, Gresham. But rather less, I'm glad to say, in Beatrice. So I've conversed very happily with her.
Do you never succumb to sickness yourself, Doctor?
I try very hard not to.
I suppose the thought of having Dr. Filgrave visit you is a fine deterrent against most diseases.
Oh, indeed it is, Beatrice. I'd even taste my own medicine before Filgrave. Seated on the other side of me is one of Lady De Courcy's daughters, Lady Emily. She, naturally enough, is a De Courcy through and through, so she and I have had rather less to say to each other. Pleasant weather today, Lady Emily.
Pleasant? No, I don't think so.
No?
Too windy.
Ah. And now...
Ladies and gentlemen...
We are to drink a toast.
I give you my dear son,
Frank Gresham.
Frank.
Thank you.
God bless you, Frank.
Your good health, Frank.
And a good wife, especially.
Yes, two or three. Well, Frank, that is Mr. Gresham. Time for a speech, Mr. Gresham.
Thank you, everyone. And I thank you in particular, sir. But I'm not yet Mr. Gresham, you know. Even though I am come of age. That title is yours, Father, and will remain so for many years to come. I am not Mr. Gresham, but a Gresham I am. Every inch a Gresham, I hope, and exceedingly proud to be so.
Well, I suppose the next time we are all together will be at your wedding, Augusta.
Yes.
Are all the bridesmaids decided upon?
Well, apart from yourself and Alexandrina, not quite. Patience Oriel is to be one.
She is a parson's sister and she has a lot of money. And I was rather hoping, though Augusta has not yet agreed it, have you, Gussie, that Mary Thorne might also be asked.
Miss Thorne?
Yes.
Beatrice, dear, that wouldn't do at all.
Well, I didn't think it would either.
But Mary would so very much like
it. I'm certain she would.
We've known her much longer than we've known Patience. She's my best friend.
Dearest cousin, Mary Thorne is a perfectly nice girl, I'm sure, though rather too often inclined to be familiar, I think, as if she lived here and were on a par with you and Augusta.
Well, in a way, she is. She has grown up with us here, was given her lessons with us.
Yes, which perhaps was not a proper or sensible arrangement. But the point is, Beatrice, your sister is peculiarly situated. The man she is marrying is not of the highest birth, and therefore she must take care that everyone about her most certainly is. Must you not, Augusta?
Yes, yes, of course.
But, Emily, the Thornes are as good a family as the Greshams or the Decor... They're as good as the Greshams, at least.
I dare say they are. And if Mary Thorne were a true Thorne, there would be no objection to her. But who precisely is Miss Mary Thorne?
Why... She is Dr. Thorne's niece, of course.
You mean that she is called as much. But do you know who her father was, or her mother?
Well, I don't. That's true.
We none of us do, Beatrice. Nor, I fear, does she.
You've been avoiding me, Mary?
No, Mr. Gresham.
Oh, Mary! Mr. Gresham, indeed.
Yes, Mr. Gresham. It must be Mr. Gresham.
Today, you mean, on account of my coming of age.
No, I mean after what happened when we last met.
Nothing happened. I told you of the love that I have for you.
Yes, Mr. Gresham.
I told you that it is a love that will never die.
Mr. Gresham.
No matter if it's opposed by others, no matter even if it's opposed by you. But why you should oppose it, Mary, I can't think. Because you love me, don't you?
Mr. Gresham.
Or if you don't, you will, won't you? Please, Mary, say you will. Say you'll love me. Say you'll marry me.
Mr. Gresham.
Mary, dearest Mary.
No, you will call me Miss Thorne, please. Not Mary.
No, Mary, I won't. I'll be shot if I do.
Well, I can't say I'll be shot if you don't, but I shan't be able to come to Greshamsbury House.
Why? Because of my mother?
No, Mr. Gresham, not because of her. I'm not in the least afraid of Lady Arabella, but I am afraid of you.
Afraid of me?
It is you that will drive me away, no one else. Please, don't do it. I'm so fond of the house, and Beatrice is such a dear, dear friend. And so are you, or were.
Oh, Mary, I still am, believe me. But I hope to be your husband, too.
Mr. Gresham, I am sure you do not wish to do me harm.
I'm sure I don't.
Please, therefore, please, don't speak again to me in that way. For if you do, you will cause me much grief and distress. You will inflict such injury on me that I shall stay away from Greshamsbury House. I should be forced to, in my own defence. He is a good man, Frank Gresham, and that I love him, I'm certain. But I have never told him so, and he should not have said that he loves me. I do love him, though, and we would be so well fitted for each other, would we not? And it would be so sweet to become the sister of my dear Beatrice, and to belong to Greshamsbury House, to really belong there. It will never happen. And if it did, I would know it was wrong. Uncle would know it too. It would be wrong, just as it is wrong, surely, for Augusta to be marrying this Mr. Moffat.
Is the tea ready, my dear?
Yes, Uncle. Come and sit down.
You've got your worrying look on.
Yes, Uncle. Well, I'm thinking, at least, about Augusta's marriage, among other things.
Augusta's marriage?
What do you think about it?
Well, Mary, I,